Hello, I'm Richard Lang, and I have Karen Visser with me here today, a very good friend of mine. And I am delighted to have you here, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my delight as well.
Karen is a good friend who is in Holland, who is very involved, not only with seeing who she really is, but sharing it, which is just fantastic. So my pleasure just to converse with Karen today, and let's see where it goes. So Karen, would you like to introduce yourself, say something a little bit about yourself to begin with at least, and how you got into seeing, and here we go.
Here we go. Okay. Well, not like you, was so fortunate to meet this Douglas way approach straight at the beginning of your life. I had a way longer meandering path, so to see, to the final point where I met seeing, and which blew me away and meant the end of my search. I had two teachers before, and
so before you get into that, just let us know how long you've been with seeing, and then we have that in mind. When did you come across seeing?
I think it must have been 2011 or something. When I found it through a magazine, looked at the website, did the pointing exercise, did then a week later the tube, I think, and had to admit slowly that my search was over.
All right, yeah. That's great. So you were going to give us some backstory, as it were, or some lead up to that.
Sure, yeah. I think it's good to start with my first teacher, which I met sort of halfway through my 30s when I was already searching a bit through books and therapy and, you know, like a lot of people do. And he was a very good teacher, sincere teacher. His method was type of very psychological. You research your conditioning, your patterning, very deeply, I must say. So the whole unconscious, how it was built up, which basically rules your life if you are unaware of it. And which certainly did mine. And
so you're in Holland. Was that a Dutch teacher, Karen?
No, he was American. His name was Jeroen Bal, but he traveled a bit. So he also came to Holland. So it was a low threshold. The first weekend was in Holland. And then later on, the groups moved to Germany, so it was combined Germans, Dutch, and a few other nationalities. And his other pillar was to explore the present moment, a bit like Eckhart Tolle, maybe slightly different, but nevertheless. And so I was for 7 years with
How
him.
How did that help you?
Yeah, it helped me to, you know, the whole system. I relaxed more and more. I got more clarity. I was driven by fear and childhood patterns, which were totally irrelevant in the present as an adult. So the system relaxes, and at the same time, I got more aware of the actual moment, more eyes for that. And we did also this long meditation, so in the end, for sometimes even 8 hours in nature, whatever. And I had a few times this glorious experience of where, you know, everything becomes so still, and I disappeared in it. And it was just this majestic performance of existence of which I was a part. And that, of course, was a kind of a breakthrough for me to see that, and which was beautiful. And I think I called it at the time an awakening, which it certainly was at its level. But it was still very much connected to an experience, you see. It was connected to a deep meditation, to looking for that deep silence. And I was always doing that, meditating as much as I could in my private life, which was busy. I had two young kids and busy family running on. I worked as well. My husband worked a lot, my then husband. So this stillness was like, you know, a bliss, really, in this busy family life. It also created a bit of a split, like spiritual life and family life are not on the same page. And it certainly did in me. It was always a bit of a conflict going on. Do I go after my spiritual yearning, or do I, you know, surrender to being a mother and taking care of my kids in a very sort of austere environment where nobody was spiritual, and I was for sure a bit of the weirdo, you know, doing even meditations and retreats like that. So I think this experience made me vulnerable for my second teacher, which I also was with for 7 years, I think.
Why did you leave the first one?
He died. He died. So that was easy in a way, because if he hadn't died, I'd left it as well. Because within that approach, I remember clearly I felt I had reached the ceiling. There was nothing new for me to discover. And still, I wasn't satisfied. I was still looking. Yeah, there was confusion still, and I couldn't place everything in a way that I felt, you know, I had whatever you call it, reached, found, whatever. So you know, looking for these specific experiences, beautiful experience, this bliss, this deep relaxation, this majestic existence then which get to you. I think I was very susceptible for the second teacher, who was very charismatic, a beautiful man, very powerful in a kind of silent way. And
how did you come across him?
I met this guy through a friend. I wasn't so in a friend introduced me to it, who was really into it. This teacher's name, he was a Canadian, he was called John Ruiter, and he had his community in Canada. So I went a few times, and then sort of, I think I got sucked in by the mystery of it all. Like, where is he coming from? And what is this mystery? He was very mysterious. And I must say, when you're sitting together with a few hundred people and you're all really one focused on the teacher, of course he was sitting on a stage and even lights on him, and you know, it was all very theoretically set up, and a lot of
it's
adoration.
A powerful thing. You went out there, obviously.
Yeah, I went to live there, also enchanted by the community, which was beautiful, all these internationalities and all these different backgrounds, and then all united in the love for the teacher. So it was beautiful. And, you know, sitting in those meetings, as they were called, was you got your fix of honey or bliss or whatever. But also it's addictive. I don't know how to call it, but there's this particular energy that hangs there, which is really very beautiful to be in. And when it's over, you just want to have more, because you think he is the source of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but then
so
after.
So when was this roughly, when you went over first?
I moved there in 2004. So I think the first times that I visited him in Canada must have been 2003. And I left in 2011. Yeah. Yeah.
So what happened?
Yeah, what happened? Well, after a year of four, probably, I had to admit that there were some stuff that wasn't very kosher going on. There was huge amounts of money involved. He was really all powerful, in the sense of, if you ask somebody if something was true, then they would answer, well, John says it's true, so it is true. You know, everybody completely under his spell, so to speak. And and then also through the grapevines, how do you call it, some sexual stuff was reaching me, which wasn't very kosher as well. There were tons of secrets. I mean, when you moved up through the circle, so to speak, and came closer to the inner circle, you were told some of the secrets, of course, with the promise of keeping it secret yourself. So if that accumulates, I had to admit that in the end, this, apart from how I'd seen his teaching changing as well, to bind people to him, to encourage them to move to Canada, leave their whole lives behind, encourage them to keep spending on his meetings and everything, because, you know, it was like an osmosis. The closer you were to him, the more you got whatever. Including that nobody, when you would ask somebody, including myself, like, what is this all about? I couldn't give an answer. It was always, it's a knowing, it's in the future. It was a total mystery where we're heading as a group. So, you know, when I moved back and disappeared through the back door there, in Canada, so to speak.
You decided it was not for you anymore, that there was something wrong.
Yeah. And of course, nobody was open to discuss that with me. So I think I got blacklisted a bit there. So with humble bread, then, moving back to Holland, having nothing initially. But it was a very good period, I must say. Very confusing. To leave behind like a whole belief system that you think you have
and
built
all your
up.
Friends.
My friends, my job, my house, place to live, everything. So, yeah, it's a bit like cold turkey, but it's a good cold turkey. It removes falseness. It removes all the stuff that
you could be honest and authentic again,
at least. Yeah. <wouldn't>
Well, a bit more anyway.
I wouldn't know. That was in that period, you know, coming back in Holland and thinking, my God, the world has moved on. In the meantime, I've been totally, you know, locked up in Canada. What's going on? Because still, I was on a search, because I only knew where this hadn't brought me. So it was like a sour pill.
And meantime, you'd split with your husband, is that right?
Already before Canada. Yeah.
Before Canada. Yeah.
Yeah, before Canada.
So
yeah,
you came back and reconnected with your children, I suppose. Is that right?
I'd never unconnected with my children. Okay. Yeah. But I just was now a bit closer to them.
So what happened next then?
Well, you know, in my curiosity, what on earth has been going on here, actually? Also looking a bit in what was spiritually then on hand, but, you know, very carefully, because certainly I wasn't going to sign up for something anymore.
No.
After this experience. So there's here this magazine in Holland about self-inquiry and non-duality called Inzicht. And I've written a poem. I'd written a lot of poetry in Canada, and one of my poems was published in it. And I took a subscription, and then I found this in the back, this little article about Catherine Harding. Was an interview. I just a few weeks ago, I reread it because I was curious, you know, what was this interview? Anyway, I read it and I was
so
so
Catherine
struck.
Harding obviously was the wife of Douglas Harding. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. He was already dead, Douglas, by then.
Oh, okay.
But, well, it must have been in 2012 or something that I read it. I found out actually it was a transcription of the interview that you had with her on the video. Yeah. But I was so struck about how she spoke to about her husband and the loving way that came across, and you know, the honesty and simpleness and the certainty with which she spoke in it, like the way it was for her, that made me very curious. So I thought, Douglas Harding, maybe I've heard the name a long time ago, but you know, there's no harm in looking it up. So I came across the website, and to my total amazement, there was just this richness of, you know, basically the whole approach, the experiments, the articles, and all for free. Mind you, at this stage in my life, I'd paid a small fortune for my all the teachings I had received, both my first and my second teacher. So that was jaw-dropping, and I did a pointing exercise of an experiment, of course, and thought, whoa.
It made an impression.
It did make an impression. I was, wow. I did it again and again and again, of course. And
the impression then when you go,
well, the impression was I couldn't see anything here. And I couldn't make sense of it. And I could see all the things. And when I came to here, I was an other, well, beast, or how do you call it? Something completely different than what I see out there. And I never really realized that even though I had these beautiful meditative experiences in which I was absent and just, you know, existence arose as this beauty, it never got to me that this is always the case, that it's actually my very nature. I thought it was a sort of a special state to be in.
Yes.
You know, something you needed to achieve by doing a lot of things. So that was the jaw-dropping thing. And then I remember I was shortly after cat-sitting in a house, and I was further exploring the website and came across the tube experiment. And, well, obviously I was alone there in the house, so there was nobody to do it with. The cat probably wasn't very willing. But there was this little statue and a torso with a head. So I put the other end of the tube on the face of the statue. And of course, it was as obvious as you do it with a person.
The tube is looking through a tube, looking through a tunnel at someone else's face, or in your case, you did it with a statue's face. And it just really makes clear that it cuts out the rest of the world. You just see the face in the tube, and it's very clear it's face there to no face here.
Absolutely, yeah. The absence here is, I mean, if you don't see it in a tube, then it's hopeless. I mean, this device, or, you know, it's just a bag, but it's so totally clear. So that was the final thing. And then...
So you did the experiments, you took action. Some people read about the experiments and don't do them, but you did them and you got the result.
I got the result, yeah. You know, it's also funny to, actually quite funny, I think, it took me 2 weeks to realize that my search was over, because also you invest in a search.
Yes.
You know, you become a bit of this spiritual personality that know so much and blah, 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 such beautiful experiences. And, you know, you can even be a bit proud of yourself and all of it. Mm-hmm. But end of search, yeah, to clearly state to myself, seeing that this is so always, always. That was the final answer. That I was looking for something permanent that wouldn't be different. Never. Would always been so. And I
not
saw
dependent
that.
Dependent on anyone else. This is self-evident. It's your own experience that you can verify anytime you like.
Not dependent on a situation, on a place, on who you are with. If you are with the teacher or not with the teacher, you know, not dependent on anything, indeed.
So did you share it with anyone at this point?
No, no.
No?
No, I was digesting this by myself. It was, for me, it was a big thing to admit to an end of search. Maybe I told a good friend or something. The one or two that were left after this, all these moves that I made in my life. But I think shortly after, there was suddenly an announcement that you came to Rotterdam for a workshop. And
yes.
And that I thought that's a good thing, I go there. Yeah. Yeah. I even took my son, my eldest
yes.
son, which... yeah, which was already a little sign of trust in this.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I was checking the whole thing out. Really, with a lot of, you know, leaning backwards and arms crossed and thinking, what is this? Yeah. I think I didn't say one word at all workshop. I was just thinking, okay, okay, let's see.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 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 And what happened after that? I guess maybe the Zooms were starting up then, that you could meet others. There was always some sort of activity. I think we also read a few of Douglas' books together with others.
Yes.
And then we had a weekly meeting about it.
The book club, so, yes. Online
book
club. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you began to connect with others who were enjoying seeing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
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 I think that's very important to...
Why?
Why? Because it's so affirming.
Mm.
You see that all these... things I've been struggling with, or the insights or whatever, it's not only me, there's a whole crowd actually that has had a similar background, you know, in another form, but the ingredients you recognize in others, and it's such a delight to hear everybody's insight. And then especially if people who were already longer with this thing, I heard how deeply they had contemplated this basic setup that we are. So I learned so much from it all. And it was also such a joy to start to express myself, you know, my insights. I think an expressed insight.
I suppose in the group in Canada, everyone deferred to the teacher, and as a follower, I'm imagining that there wasn't that much opportunity to grow in a way through your own communication of things. But with this seeing, your expression is valued and welcomed.
You know, there was sharing going on as well, but it was always up to a certain level, because after that, you weren't supposed to get it. You were supposed to stay there and moving on to the next in the future, even though there was fake, and but it certainly was grand and whatever. While with this, you know, sharing, it confirms that we all have got it, which I think is a very important place to start from.
Yes.
And then all our unique insights coming from that, because, you know, we all see different parts of reality just by nature, that we are in a different place.
Yes.
Nobody is standing in each other's shoes. And so that person says that, and I think, oh my gosh, you know, that's marvelous to look at it like that. And I learned something from it. And another, somebody says that, and,
yeah.
So it's like, the diamond is getting more complete with all these little facets that you hear from others.
Yes. Because the experience is so obvious. One accepts that everyone gets it. So, like now, it's not crossing my mind. Is Karen seeing her no face? And is she seeing it as clear as I am, or as, you know, more clearly? That is just, that doesn't cross my mind. I'm enjoying the one consciousness, and our two voices are different perspectives within that. Yeah,
that's true. You know, and having come across this call it approach, that's the first approach which clearly stated, you know, let's start from the point where we all see reality, where you see reality as it is. You've got it, you found it, you are awake, you see it, whatever you call it, and it's so easy and natural. So, I mean, there's no point to that. And then I noticed, and others as well, it's just the starting point, but it's such a different starting point.
Yeah.
So different, because it wasn't exactly that I thought, okay, now I found it, and then everything was forever or is forever the same. After, you know, that initial seeing and admitting to myself, okay, search over, I still had a few big insights to come, and I'm sure that will continue. Like, you know, I can give an example of it. Was then a few years later, and there still was, I think, sort of inner struggle, like, oh, am I now hooked on to another method and another movement? And how do I reconcile with, you know, before being so involved in this Canada thing? And I think I told you about it. I was in a Zoom meeting or so. And then you said, all groups are in you. And for me, there dropped something, you know, that meant that the conflict between these two approaches and the ways I had been invested in the one and was now opening up to another, that was completely solved. It was all within me. And as you know, is a lot more all happening in me. There was no conflict.
Yeah,
and
very freeing.
Yeah, conflict dropped. So I remember another big moment was when I was phoning with Catherine, because at that time I'd started making the book, The Freedom to Love, about her life,
so,
and her vision.
Got to know Catherine, and I don't know, by then probably you'd been over to England, you'd met Catherine, you'd be, perhaps even been to a gathering, and you decided to interview Catherine and put together a book about her life, right?
That's right, yeah. I met her, and I was very, in a quiet way, impressed by her, how she, her aliveness, even though she was in her 80s already, I think. And her wisdom and her storytelling. She was a very good storyteller, yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, I asked her if she would be okay if I would interview her about her life for the purpose of making a book out of it. And she wasn't very keen at first. I think during the first year, she never really believed that the book would come of it. She just enjoyed meeting me and, you know, go places. And I always had to urge her every day, like when I was there, like, come on,
so
Catherine
was a, of course, Catherine was French, and she'd moved back to France after Douglas died. She was down in the
she
south.
Did, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I always went for a few days and to interview a bit more. But then she said, oh, come on, let's go here, let's go there. Anyway, so we sometimes, yeah, we phoned, and I think I was telling her a story about something. I can't remember what it was. And about, I must have been talking about my consciousness. And then she said at some point, but Karin, your consciousness is not personal. It is the universal consciousness. Well, boof. You know, of course, but it had never gotten to me so deeply before that there's nothing personal here.
Mm.
This awareness is everybody's awareness.
Mm.
And there's no name stuck on it. And I think, you know, it's a little bit maybe of another trick of wanting to pat yourself on the shoulder and saying what a aware, awake person you are, which of course is absolutely impossible. As a person, you are not awake.
But this is an example of how inspiring friends can be who share this. They can open a door onto another perspective within this one. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And not in a teaching, just in a contact, in a conversation you have with each other. So there's, I would say this initial seeing, you can see it and then you see it. And then I, of course, you have to repeat it because you can't see for memory like I saw yesterday. Mm. And it's good for today as well. Mm. It's always actual in the moment that you see what is, yeah, what is here and what is appearing in it. But it also sort of has to sink in.
Yes.
Because this whole body, feelings, thoughts, you know, that's still operating, so used to operate in its old ways. And the beauty of seeing is that you have it, so there's nothing that you have missed. And now in all relaxation and freedom, you can just see how it starts to sink in at ever deeper levels.
Yeah.
And
there
won't be an end to it, I'm sure. As long as you live, you know, you have this life, you can more deeply, well, some people call it embody it, or it's all a big term, but modern term, fashion term.
So one
term,
of
maybe.
The things that emerged was that you met Amma, who I knew for years. He was a Buddhist monk, and then he left the order, and he met Douglas and Catherine, and was close to Catherine, actually. So tell us a bit about your experience of being in relationship and sharing seeing in the relationship.
Well, seeing is always here in the household.
You met Amar at one of the gatherings, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I'd met him the year before when he was still a monk.
Oh.
There were these three monks, these Buddhist monks, and I was a bit fascinated by them. I'd never met monks or Buddhist monks. And, you know, they were these happy three, and I couldn't even tell them apart. So they were all in their robes, and even Amma and another guy looked a bit the same.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I loved talking to them because, I mean, becoming a monk is quite a commitment to this,
Yeah.
and that I admired in them, that they had given their lives away. Well, for what? Yeah, for this, I presume. At least I presumed then. And so great my surprise when I heard halfway the year, the following year, that one of them had disrobed, and I didn't even know what it was. I thought now he's wearing jeans, but he's still a monk. But no, somebody had to tell me disrobing means, he stopped being a monk. He
Yeah.
left his order, and was a bit shocked by that, actually. Yeah, and then I think he was staying with our friend Sam. I had his friend in Australia, and
Yeah.
there was the Zoom going on, so he was there too, and we had a good laugh, and he was wearing shorts, so it was all very funny. And and then there was the next gathering, and I don't know, I just came from the station with my suitcase, and guess who was in front of the building? Another person with a suitcase wearing ridiculous clothes because, he didn't have any. So he was just a bundle of what was given to him. And it was Amma. And so I think we were both a bit like, gosh, what do we say? And but we started to laugh both. It was this big laugh. And now I think it's like this Buddha laugh. We had this strange Buddha laugh. I remember thinking while I was laughing, this is weird, why am I laughing? Anyway, he laughed in the same way, and then we still didn't know what to say, so we went inside. And and then we talked a bit here and there, and afterwards he wrote me an email. Yeah. Would be nice to get to know each other a bit better. And I was having had a number of relationships in my life. I was sort of totally okay with staying single for the rest of my life. But I thought, okay, if the universe wants me together with a partner, then I have one requirement. It needs to be somebody who is seeing. Not particular in the headless way, although, that would be convenient. Not somebody who is starting seeing and I can then help to do more, but an equal partner. That
Yeah.
you both bring this awareness to the relationship. And that he was. So then there was no question about getting together. And it's marvelous, I must say, because whatever arises in our daily life, we very quickly get to seeing it from here and reflecting upon it from here and seeing we have very different personalities, very different backgrounds, the both of us. So it's easy when that starts to come up to have conflicts about it or whatever, but it's all very easily resolved from the seeing point of view. And then it even makes it interesting that you have these differences. So it's like you bring more to the mix, more richness, more qualities to the mix than if you would be on the same page completely. I find it, yeah, I find it's a blessing, actually. It's a real blessing to also live my daily life with somebody beside me who's seeing and approaching life from that. Yeah.
So with that, you also I remember you worked for a while with kids in a school, and now you're retired, but you're editing InSiC magazine now. Yeah, What's your life about now, as well as being with Emma? What's it about?
What's it about? Well, yes, strangely, this interview where I talked about reading it in that magazine, which made me look into the Headless Way website, is the same magazine I'm now chief editor of.
Yeah.
It's strange how that went. The book was just finished, Catherine's book, and then they were looking for another chief editor quite quickly. And for some reason, I caught the courage to say, okay, what is it all about? And then after I've had some more information, I thought, if you want me, I'll do it. And I'm still doing it. So, that's 8 years down the road, or 7 years.
So it's an Advaita non-dualist kind of magazine, isn't it?
Its subtitle is about self-inquiry and non-duality. Although the people who started it do have an Advaita background, it's not only about Advaita. I don't have an Advaita background at all myself. So it's about anything that has the non-dual insight or a serious self-inquiry as a starting point for their teaching or their method or whatever it will be. So there is a freedom around it, but when it gets too, superficial or not seeing through till the end, then this is a magazine that takes on board only teachers or methods that do take it to the end. And
I don't really know what you mean there, but you take
to the end, meaning waking up to reality, waking it as it is, because you also have a lot of teachers, like for example my second one, who sort of hang in there, and then it would be more about researching your conditioning or your patterns in order to have a better life.
Magazine is obviously not a headless way magazine. So how does seeing who you are help you or affect how you do the job? And I don't know.
Select the article.
Yeah.
Say yes to this, no to that. Yeah. That's so another amazing thing, actually, that I don't feel I, of course, as a chief editor or as an editor, I have to say whether something has the quality. But it's in me, there is no conflict about, oh, this teacher approaches it like that, or that teacher or speaker or method approaches it like that, and they're not exactly on the same page. So how do I reconcile that within this magazine? I'm coming from this wide open space in which everything presents itself. Like when I was trying to reconcile the Canadian approach with opening up to headlessness, all groups are in you. Well, all approaches are in you. All teachers are in me.
I imagine that your awareness that one's experience of one's true nature is nonverbal, which, in my view, frees me to choose different words at different times and not get stuck on one particular way of thinking about it. I imagine that there's something like that in play with you, that you are not looking for people to agree with you in words, I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. And you see that everybody has their own expression, and it's a different way of presenting reality. And And it's all beautiful. And the one way of wording it will speak more to some person, and the other way of wording it or emphasizing a certain facet will speak more to somebody else. And it's beautiful to have that variety.
Mm.
So, I have no problem at all with that. I feel like this big umbrella, and everything can come under. Yeah.
So you're also involved in sharing seeing. You're leading workshops. What's going on there? What inspires you there? What's your vision, as it were?
Well, my vision is a very simple one. I just so enjoy somebody getting it, somebody seeing it, somebody coming with a specific question. And, you know, most people are like me. They have been doing a lot in order to get this clarity. And still are confused about one thing, or suffering from something, or from this confusion. And then seeing their face light up when they point here and they see, you know, there's nothing here. But it's not a nothing. It's filled up with everything. And seeing this vibrancy then with what it's filled. And then usually our day workshops, and during the day, keep confirming that through other experiences. You know, the mornings, usually there are a few doubts coming up and people still have this frown a bit. And then, but in the afternoon, they relax into it. And usually they're quite happy when they're walking out of the door. That's such a delight. I'm totally enjoying somebody, just, you know, an ordinary woman or man, just like me, getting it and loving it. And then, you know, since there's a little bit of a group forming now in Holland, just a few people who stay with it, really love it and come back every time and come to the Dutch Zoom meetings and so on. They're seeing how it changes their lives gradually. If you only, you know, meet them now and then during a year already, I see such depth and such, happiness in a quiet type of way coming into their lives. And it's really beautiful. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Of course, I've been a teacher for a lot of my life. I once started out as my first education was teacher for primary school, which I never did. But then I worked as a drama teacher for a dramatic expression for quite a long time. So teaching is a bit in my blood. Yeah.
And they also say, don't they, if you want to learn, teach, because you have to put into words, you have to get clear on, you discover as you're speaking what you think and feel. So it nourishes one's own growth.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's just beautiful to spend a whole day with the experiments and with this insight, and together with others. It amplifies it. It's so beautiful to listen to their responses to it. Everybody hearing their responses, everybody getting inspired by each other. And it doesn't matter how long you are with this, because, you know, sometimes I'm really inspired, extra inspired with somebody who just discovered it.
Yes.
Yeah. And uses their own fresh words to try and express it. Yeah. Yeah.
So does anything else come to mind that you'd like to share that's on your mind or just comes up in the moment now?
Well, maybe, one more thing that, from my experience as an editor now over the past 8 years and all the methods and all the teachers that came across my desk and all the beautiful wording and all the less beautiful wording of how to find this and so on, I haven't found anything like Douglas, his approach, introducing the experiments and making it so accessible, so possible for somebody there on the spot to see their true nature. Nothing. It amazes me. And I'm, of course, it just for me confirms that I'm with the right, in the right crowd. With a massive potential, you know, if it's so easy and so accessible, let it spread. It will put a lot of teachers out of job, of course, but, so what? I mean, in the end, you can't have the one half of Holland teaching the other half of Holland. I hope it comes to that, but you know, within the headlessness, there's no hierarchy. It's like in the gathering now, English gathering, we have like four people leading it, you and Judy and John and me. So that's already so such a beautiful example of there is no one teacher to do it among friends is so much richer. And it's so much nicer to listen to all these voices, whether they're new or old in it, expressing themselves or leading you through an experiment. You can't do it wrong. It's always inspiring. So, that's, what shall I say? I admire Douglas, I think really, what he made available in his legacy is of astounding value. These experiments, I mean, his words are fantastic too, and the way he worked it out, but it are the experiments that that are the treasure.
So you have, for Dutch friends, you've got a regular Dutch meeting online and then occasional meetings at your home, and that's all available information on our website, isn't it? Headless.org.
So, or my Dutch website, headlesscafe.info.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So, and then you come now and then, so that's also fantastic. Yeah. Well, and we have this gathering, this first 5-day gathering as well.
Oh, yes.
This year,
In Holland, yes.
In Holland, yeah.
Well, a delight to talk to you, Karen, and share the great space from different points of view.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It's always lovely to talk about this.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen.
Bye.